You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Michelle Cohen. Michelle, thanks so much for being with me today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Michelle, I want to talk to you about your history in public art for public schools and all that you've done there. I want to begin with, because that's such a pivotal part of your career and such a big part of your contribution to the arts, what are you working on at this very moment? What is your position and what are you involved with at this time?
So currently I'm the curator for the Architect of the Capitol, and I essentially am responsible for all the iconic public art that's associated with the Capitol campus. And that responsibility is sort of twofold. It's preservation-oriented, but there's also the interpretive aspect. And right now, I think I've been struggling most with this idea of what does it mean to be a responsible steward? Because when we preserve things, we're saying that they have value. But there's also a lot of public art on the Capitol campus that, you know, no longer communicates a widely shared worldview. And what do you do? You know, do I lead a preservation effort? Do we do preservation in concert with reinterpretation? Do we commission new art to be in dialogue with the older art? These are, you know, sort of interesting questions. So a lot of my job focuses on preservation, but I never see that in a vacuum.
And to give a context, the Capitol campus, what does that encompass exactly?
Okay, so it's the U.S. Capitol building. It's the Library of Congress. It's three House office buildings and three Senate office buildings. And it's the Capitol grounds. So a recent project that I was involved with was the conservation of the Grant Memorial by Schrades, the artist. And some of you may be familiar with that from House of Cards, from the intro to House of Cards. It was featured quite a lot before it was conserved. So that's a fairly prominent project where, for example, my office, the curator's office, provided, say, the subject matter expertise in overseeing the conservation, working in concert, you know, with other colleagues at the Architect of the Capitol, as well, of course, with the conservator.
So this is, it's very interesting, the position we're in now, of course, because public art is so important. It's obviously in the public eye all the time, or very often, especially through social media. And as you were saying, there's all these kind of complicated questions now about preserving it, and this is the definition of culture and our history. So how are those things resolved? I mean, I would think now there's, yeah, the issues of things being offensive in one way or another, whether they're, you know, like Confederate statues, but that's just one part of it. It's happening on campuses, college campuses everywhere, where
right.
People who are associated with owning slaves or now there's a host of other issues that we're all being more sensitive to. And it seems that we're, you know, judging the work now in our current context of 2019, which must make it very difficult for you trying to figure out which to conserve and how much to conserve and how do you make those decisions without just going along with the...
Right, exactly. I mean, really my role, you know, as steward of the collection is I report to my 535 bosses, which is Congress, which is the Senate and the House of Representatives. And so I'm really, in a sense, I play more of a custodial role, not so much the decision maker. However, you know, I take my responsibility about educating and informing the public very seriously. So, for example, one of the projects that I'm working on now, sort of a more scholarly project, it's for an anthology called Teachable Monuments. And the chapter that I'm contributing is called The Preservation Dilemma, Confronting Two Controversial Monuments from the United States Capitol. And my discussion focuses on two sculptures that had previously been exhibited on the east front of the U.S. Capitol on the cheek blocks facing. So when you would mount the stairs and enter the rotunda, these statues would flank your route, and one was called is called The Discovery of America by Luigi Persico, and the other one is entitled Rescue by Horatio Greenough. And by 1853, both were installed, but they were removed in 1958 when the East Front was pushed out 35 feet. Perhaps you didn't know that. Many people don't realize it, but the Capitol is always a work in progress, and there are a lot of things that have been changed over the years. But essentially, the East Front was pushed out because the cast iron dome was literally overhanging the building. That had been also added mid-century. So at any rate, these sculptures are in storage, and they're in very poor condition, but artistically, the Greenough is very important, and certainly historically, it's very important. And so, you know, I'm focused on or really thinking about what does it mean to be a responsible steward in this instance, and do we share images of these sculptures in storage with the public, like a virtual tour? Is it even justifiable to invest money to conserve them because the iconography is really offensive? No one is Columbus striding forth, holding up a globe representing the New World, and next to him cowers a naked Native American woman who's crouching next to him. And the other one, the Rescue, is this sort of omniscient pioneer figure that rises up behind a tomahawk-wielding Native American savage who's about to attack this woman and child.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so just from my description, I think you can sort of get that these are problematic.
Right.
So that's something, you know, but I've sort of reached the conclusion working on these particular pieces that responsible stewardship in this instance does mean taking ownership of them and, you know, asking those difficult questions, you know, and ultimately fostering a public conversation about public art and public art in the United States Capitol. So in this instance, I'm sort of suggesting that we meaning the Congress, really, because it won't ultimately be my decision, but I'm sort of encouraging the idea that maybe we could do like a virtual exhibit about these sculptures where we could then get a multiplicity of voices commenting on them. We could provide a more contextualized history, and we would provide visual access in an inexpensive way too. And, you know, they would be in a virtual space, which is an interesting kind of public space. You know, I've thought a lot about that as well. Very different from putting something that's a physical presence in your own personal space.
Right. Yeah, that's true. The virtual space of, especially your proposal there, you know, would create more comments typically because it is online and inviting discussion. And could potentially generate more conversation because it's online.
Right, exactly. That's sort of how I'm looking at this. And so it's an idea that I've been floating around among my colleagues, also an idea that I'm discussing with other museum professionals and people here at the Capitol, and it seems to have a lot of traction. I mean, it might, in this case, be the best solution.
I like that. Let's also talk about public art for public schools, because you were involved in that for so long in New York City, and I know that's very important to you, and it's important to me. So to touch on that, public art for public schools, what do you want to say, and why is it so important to you?
Well, you know, I was hired to create that program in 1989. I was in graduate school. And honestly, I thought I was going to be there for 1 year. It never occurred to me I'd be there for 20 years and that I'd have this amazing opportunity to shape educational spaces. So my job there was, you know, really had two parts. One was being the curator and sort of the preservationist of existing public art in the New York City public schools, because it's a really vast, incredible collection, you know, features early murals, but, you know, that date to, say, 1905, as well as mosaics by Ben Chan and Hans Hoffman. And, you know, there's an incredible roster of internationally, you know, renowned artists that have contributed to art in the public school. So part of what I did was discover all of this and save it. And then the other part of my job was commissioning new art for new schools. And I really saw that as a privilege as well. And I, you know, really came to understand how important educational environments are. It's not just about what students are learning in the classroom, it's the experience that they have at their school, you know, and what that means. And so and ultimately, after all this work, and I ended up writing my dissertation with a history of public art in the New York City public schools, and then in 2009, I published a book on the subject. And to me, that was the best way to preserve the collection and to also educate people about it, the general public, scholars, school principals, parents, teachers, and kids. So the book that I wrote, really, I aimed it at this general audience. And I think because of it, you know, people are much more mindful of New York City's incredibly rich collection of buildings and art.
And, you know, knowing New York City's collection so well now, or you did, what were some of the standout works of art that you remember or still exist in
I think to me one of the most important one of the chapters I wrote was about art in the civil rights era, and Boys and Girls High School was built in the 60s, and as a result, a collection of work only by African American artists was commissioned for this school, which is really unusual. And it came about.
What date was that?
It's built? A Boys and Girls High School, so it was being designed actually in the late 60s, early 70s. It finally opened in 76.
And where was that located?
It's still located. It's at 1700 Fulton Street in Brooklyn. There's a really fabulous mural on the exterior of the building. By Ernst Critchlow, and then there are several works on the interior of the building that are really outstanding. One is a series of three murals by Norman Lewis, who's quite well known as really the African American abstract expressionist. He's been, you know, he's part of that group. Alzire Quartor is another really interesting Chicago artist. He did some murals. Camille Billups did a mosaic, did a ceramic. I know she recently passed away, and I got to work with her actually in another school commission later. And I think probably the most powerful piece at Boys and Girls High School is by Ed Wilson, and it's called Middle Passage, and it was done in 1978, and it's on the exterior of the building. And it, you know, recreates the horror of the slave trade and what it meant to be in the hold of a slave ship. So I think as a collection of work, it's a very significant thing that these artists were brought together at that point, and they really represented a cross-section, I think, of some of the most interesting work being done by African-American artists at that point. So, you know, stylistically, it's a very diverse collection, and thematically, it touches on a lot of really important issues. So that's just, you know, one example of a group of work. And then, of course, earlier, you know, there's a Tiffany stained glass window that's at Erasmus Hall High School. There's the DeWitt Clinton murals that were commissioned in 1905 by Charles Yardley Turner. And then there's the Hans Hofmann mosaic and the Ben Shahn. And then during the New Deal period, it's a really kind of flowering of public art, and there are many really important.
The WPA mural started
exactly
popping up in post offices
and in schools. And the schools have a very significant collection in New York City because the New Deal was really active in New York City, and you also had so many artists there. And so I think probably the most outstanding mural from that period is Lucian Block's Evolution of Music. That's at George Washington High School. That's in Manhattan. And, you know, she worked with Diego Rivera. She knew Frida Kahlo. She's got, it's because of her that she was able to document the mural at Rockefeller Center that Rivera had painted and that Rockefeller destroyed because it included the portrait of Lenin. And then Rivera recreated it in Mexico City based on Lucien Bloch's photographs.
Huh.
So it's a really incredibly rich artistic legacy that is housed in the New York City public schools. And murals by Romare Bearden, another example. Mary Callery did this incredible piece that's from the 50s. That's at PS 34. That's on East 12th Street in Manhattan.
And how do people see those? Is there tours of those now?
Well, you know, I left New York right when I published this book, so I never really had an opportunity to do a lot of tours. A lot of these things are visible from the exterior, or not a lot, a good percentage can be seen because they're exterior pieces. And I don't know, you know, I think at one point the Municipal Art Society may have been sponsoring some tours. I'm not really sure at this time, you know, how much of this is available to the public. I mean, it's always available to teachers and students, of course, in a school. But I'm not sure how many schools are able to open their doors in a wider way.
And they're preserved. The funding is there to continue to preserve these. I noticed a lot of times the ones in post offices, they don't look like they're in such great shape.
Yes, we were able to fund a lot of conservation projects. This was during the time of the New York City School Construction Authority, and so money was allocated for the commissioning of new art or the preservation of existing art. And then the Municipal Art Society put together a very successful program called Adopt a Mural that was a collaboration with, at that time it was called the Art Commission, now the Design Commission of the City of New York, and they were able to get a lot of private funding to conserve major murals. So it's been a combination, I'd say, of a public-private partnership. But my hope is that because of all the work that I did and the book that I was able to publish, it will keep this on the radar. You know, it will make people aware and appreciate how rich the collection is.
That sounds fascinating. I'd love to see some of those things myself. I want to thank you for the work you've done in the past on that, because that's such a powerful contribution. You know, public art is of course so visible, especially as children seeing all of that. It seems like an introduction to art and to visual ways of thinking for kids.
Right, you're absolutely right, and I really have to just thank all the incredible artists that I've worked with and architects, you know, who shaped these environments and really made that possible.
Right. And I want to ask you one more question. What are you reading at the moment?
Well, I tend to read a few books at one time lately. So in March, I made a trip to Mexico, and I finally got to see all those Diego Rivera murals I was talking about. And so then I decided, well, I really should read 1491, which came out quite some time ago, but I hadn't read it, you know, which it's a really interesting exploration of, you know, Central America, South America, pre-Columbus. And, you know, because I visited some of these historic sites and archaeological sites, you know, really wanting to learn more about it. And then another book that I've recently started, it really has to do with my work on images of Native Americans in capital art. It's called Native American Identities by Scott Vickers. And so it's looking at stereotypes in literature and art. I guess I tend to read things that I think that contextualize my work, in addition, of course, to reading whatever I can about the Capitol. There's quite a large group of books, very extensive literature, I should say, on the Capitol, and I'm always learning something new. There's always a new fact to learn.
It's a really
complicated building.
Interest, right? The campus is just huge, isn't it? I mean, you went through it quickly before, but I thought that it's like a small city, really.
It is, actually. And, you know, the amount of art associated with just the Capitol building itself and the Library of Congress, you know, is just enormous.
Right.
So I'm constantly learning new things. And today, for example, a very exciting thing is going to happen. We are going to see the dedication of a new sculpture that's entering the Statuary Hall collection of Chief Standing Bear that Nebraska commissioned. So there's sculptures in the Capitol that the states are in charge of. It's called the Statuary Hall Collection. And so this unveiling is going to happen later this afternoon, and that's a very significant thing.
That's very exciting. Well, good luck with that. And Michelle, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.